Birth, The Grand Division, Chapter 19. "Did you remember your charger?" asked Dick.
Yeah, I got it," said Kyle.
"The one that goes onto the power port on the console?" asked Dick.
Oh, yeah, I was going to get that.
"I'll get it," said Kyle. He could do differential equations in his head, but sometimes he forgot to do laundry or where he put his glasses. It was a big change to take on an assignment at Oak Ridge, Tennessee. He had never been out of the Los Angeles area of Southern California. His attention disorder was only exacerbated by his obsessive compulsion to accomplish great things while failing to remember the simplest things.
"What is this in the trunk of the Challenger?" asked Dick.
"It's a set of sodium iodide crystal detectors," said Kyle.
"Where did you get them?"
"Oh, JPL had them lying around. They weren't using them."
"Okay, let me try another question. What are they for, and why are they in the trunk?"
That's two questions. Anyway, they detect radiation, and the small one is portable, and the long one is really sensitive and should work at a distance pretty good," said Kyle as he came running from the shop office with his DC car charger for his computer and the phones.
"Why don't we just use a Geiger counter, like this one?" he asked, holding up the yellow metal instrument with a large meter in the center.
"Oh, that won't work, really. Not enough information. We need to know the species of the radiation," said Kyle as he looked through his shoulder bag with both hands.
"Species? Like, what does that mean?"
"The crystal picks up gamma and beta decay signatures, and we can use the spectrographic program to tell exactly the source of that radiation. In fact, once we know the species of the nuclide, we could tell the precise reactor that source came from, if we have this catalog of nuclides from the different reactors that enriched weapons-grade plutonium," said Kyle, holding up the thick white catalog from his shoulder bag.
"And why do we need to know that?" asked Dick.
"Didn't you see the sum of all fears?" asked Kyle.
"That's the one with the bomb, right?"
"Yeah, but the source of the bomb was traced to a U.S. reactor because the warhead was Israeli, remember? It wasn't Russian," said Kyle.
"Oh, yeah, I remember that. You mean that was real?"
"Only the part about tracing the warhead back to its parent reactor. The movie was just a movie. Well, it was a book, but it was fake, you know, fictional," said Kyle, trying to say everything fast enough to get to the next thought bouncing around in his head.
"So I learned something new, which I always like, but I still don't know why we need this stuff. The Challenger's trunk is smaller than my Accord. We're going to look like we're from Fresno with all this stuff in the back seat," said Dick.
"Hey, we're going to Manhattan Central. I mean, this is where the Trinity was born."
"Well, sort of. I mean, the only two times nuclear weapons were used in battle, they came from the Brain Trust at Oak Ridge," said Kyle.
"And this means we have to take radiation detectors?" asked Dick.
"Look, it's kind of like having special glasses that allow you to see aliens, you know? It's like most people are blind and can't see what they're breathing or eating. When I hook these crystals to my computer, I have a view into the subatomic world around us," said Kyle, holding his hands out like he was ready to accept an Oscar.
"Anything else, Einstein?" asked Dick.
"Yeah. When do we leave?"
"We should heat the headers in the next hour. I think we can get out of the city tonight and be across the desert by dawn. I think we'll sleep in Oklahoma City if we can make it that far by tomorrow night," said Dick.
"I can help drive," said Kyle.
"Ha, like hell. You're in charge of entertainment," said Dick. He walked upstairs and turned off the lights and shut down the air compressor. He walked up front to the office and removed the external hard drives from the desktop computers and put them into the fireproof floor safe and closed the door. He didn't like the idea of leaving his unrelated little brother in Tennessee, so he didn't know when he would be back. It was one of the advantages of having the optimum number of employees. Zero. He didn't even have a pet or any plants to water. Women had tried his entire life to penetrate that iron wall around his heart, and he was a big fan of beautiful women. But he was an even bigger fan of liberty. There was something ultimately peaceful on the ragged edge of the laws of physics that told him it was where he belonged.
Except for a brief and unfortunate encounter with a concrete wall while racing go-karts, he was in perfect condition. He could do the right thing the first time with cars. And, it appears, places as well, that took mortals multiple attempts. He and his fans considered his abilities more than luck. His ability to split the last few seconds before death into long, negotiable moments allowed him to sidestep disaster. His computer archives were full of sportscasters eloquently expressing disbelief at his racing success through pileups, fires, and close second victories. He recalled one wreck where his car spun out, flattened his tires, and left him parked sideways just past turn four. Unable to slow down for the yellow lights, another car slammed into his machine, tearing it in two. Dick saw the car coming in slow motion at nearly 150 miles an hour. He tucked in his legs as the front end was ripped off the car, tearing the steering wheel right out of his hands. He simply unhooked his harness, stepped out of the seat and forward onto the track, and waved at the crowd without a scratch on him. Within a few minutes, the two of them were harnessed into front seats of the purple dual turbocharged Dodge Challenger, parked on the glossy epoxy floor of Dick's speed shop. Dick flipped the main power switch into the on position, flipped the fuel pumps on, and watched for the gauge to reach 120 psi. He pressed the start button, and the engine barked into action. The motor mounts were folded steel brackets bolted to the frame and the engine block, with a hard urethane bushing around large bolts torqued between them. This allowed the power of the motor to be instantly delivered to the street through the tires without the springy delay offered by stock motor mounts. The internal engine parts were balanced to within 0.1 gram, which allowed the motor to turn 10,000 RPM without any vibration. "This ain't your mama's Valiant," he told Yuki the first night he raced the Dodge in the street racing empire she had built around his favorite sport. He even set a record for the highest speed ever recorded on Interstate 210 when he ran from police and headed out to the El Cajon Pass. Kyle pressed the garage door remote and the steel roll-up door rose to a warm California night. They rolled out the door and headed for the freeway as the automatic door closed and locked behind them. "What is our music selection for tonight?" asked Kyle. "I think a little Golden Earring is in order, don't you?" said Dick. "Abso-freaking-lutely," said Kyle, searching for his iPhone for the right playlist. "Radar Love?" asked Kyle. "Start with Twilight Zone, and then Radar Love," said Dick. "Excellent choice, my brother," said Kyle as he thumbed the song into the Triumph 500-watt stereo system and waited for the mood to establish itself. "You have 7 minutes and 58 seconds to hit the freeway, and then Radar Love kicks in." "No problema," said Dick as the drums began to thump the body panels of the shiny purple Challenger. If they drove the speed limit, it would take them nearly 18 hours to reach Oklahoma City. That, of course, would be a crime against humanity. "Not to worry," said Dick to himself. They had enough music to avoid hearing the same song twice for years, and the extra tank on the Dodge would allow them to drive for nearly 600 miles before refueling. He regretted filling the back seat with stuff, because you never know when some female might be hitching along the way. He could make her life complete by giving a ride in this amazing machine with the famous Daring Dick. The freeway was crowded and fast as usual, but by the time they reached Ontario, he figured the road would open up. He recalled the deal he had made with the president at Camp David over the world-class sausage and eggs prepared to perfection by the chef. His driving record was expunged, and he promised the president never to street race again. He wondered for a moment if using Kyle's custom radar and police laser jamming program was being disingenuous to the terms of that deal. He played with the idea there was something about the term safe imprudent driving that might provide a loophole for arriving at their destination somewhat sooner than the estimate displayed by their GPS screen, now glowing in its muted nighttime colors on the Challenger's custom-made carbon fiber dashboard. After all, it wasn't exactly racing. The twin turbochargers made a harmonic whine as the car surged onto the on-ramp, just as Radar Love started pounding the stereo LED power meters on the entertainment screen. Been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. For a band that wasn't exactly a one-hit wonder, they sure wrote a perfect song for holding onto a ride like this. 85 will give us 45-second miles, said Kyle with his laptop open. Since doing time as one of the most notorious youth hackers of the California Public Transportation Network, he had refined his abilities to watch without being seen. He had integrated Garmin's GPS program with the RFID tracking network for the California Highway Patrol, so he could see real-time the location of every CHP vehicle in relation to their own. It was quite handy when they were street racing, so he thought he would use it to avoid any unnecessary delays exchanging paperwork with any government revenuers on this trip. It was common knowledge that California was broke, and they made up the difference by collecting speed taxes from drivers using the public highways. Everyone drove fast, so it was just a matter of time before a person got tagged for a contribution to the local revenuers. Thanks to the DHS, America had become one nation under surveillance. The highway cameras were coupled with license plate and facial recognition capabilities, so Kyle developed a prismatic plate cover that, from the elevated perspective on top of a tall pole, it read, "No photo available," and it worked perfectly. When they added automated speed detection components to the system, they tried to have it mail a speeding ticket to the license holder, but that was challenged in court. Now the system would just alert a cruiser with a photo of the car, and they would simply chase you down and write the ticket in person. That left Kyle no choice but to develop radar and laser jamming technology so that no alert was posted when they were driving fast. If they wanted to catch Dick speeding, they had to do it the old-fashioned way. They had to witness it, personally. "I paid for these roads, and I will drive them any way I damn well please," Dick would say. "At the end of the day, real liberty has to provide you a way to escape." He established in his mind a uniquely American duty to figure out a way to beat the system. Each time the system got smarter, it raised the bar on the challenge of keeping that lifestyle. Kyle liked to call driving fast the First Amendment. The rich are allowed to use their money as free speech. We speak with the accelerator pedal. They had a cross-country run to make, so the odds of being observed going fast were greatly increased. Kyle tried once to calculate the probability per mile of getting caught, but there were too many variables. One thing is for sure, those odds went way up if you were the only car on the road. When asked by a girl why he didn't just drive the speed limit, Dick responded, "Are you kidding? If I did that, I wouldn't arrive here for 8.3 more days," as she stood dumbfounded. As expected, the traffic got lighter after they passed Ontario, and the climb up through the El Cajon Pass saw the temperature drop by 10 degrees. They closed the sunroof and turned the stereo down a little to compensate for the quieter driving conditions. Dick noticed the exhaust temperatures drop a little, so he pressed a little harder on the accelerator. "We're down to 35-second miles, dude," said Kyle. "I was wondering if you were still with me over there," said Dick. "Oh, I am. I was just making sure there were no patrol planes up there tonight." "We're cool," said Kyle. "We'll hit I-40 in about 20 minutes. I can make Vegas in an hour from there," said Dick, testing the idea with Kyle. "I can't see that far ahead. Wait till we get past Barstow a ways. I'll have a look then." "I don't mind, and it should be pretty open, except for trucks. I can monitor the radios to see if anyone narks on us," said Kyle. "Yeah, you're probably right. I'll keep it around a C note, unless it's perfect." "You'll get better mileage that way," said Kyle. "You sound like my mother," said Dick. Kyle was quiet for a few minutes, tapping away on his laptop hooked to his hotspot. He felt at home, harnessed into the Challenger, next to Dick. He tried to look ahead to the project at Oak Ridge, wondering if his foamy edge physics would change the world with cleaner and cheaper energy that was safe for everyone. That's what the guys at JPL called it. You know, that leading edge of the next wave, they would ask. Well, you're kind of that quantum foam out there on the front edge of the leading edge, they joked. They stopped joking when they saw what his magnetized hardwire welding would do for producing flawlessly airtight joints between stainless steel panels. Plus, it was about 10 times faster than hand TIG welding fittings. We'll gas up in Flagstaff, okay? Asked Dick. That'll work, said Kyle. There's a highway patrol about 30 miles up on the opposite side. He stopped. I can't tell if he's revenueing or if he's taking pictures, so you might want to drop it back to 75 in 10 minutes or so. I'll let you know if he starts moving again, said Kyle. Got it, said Dick. We'll just cruise on up to Flagstaff. What do you say?
Sounds like a boring place, said Kyle.
Hopefully. I don't have any plans to see much more than the men's room anyway.